I teach people that emotions are much more important than things that they have done. So how do you feel is a far more interesting answer than what did you do? Because people are interested in feelings and want, they want to know how you failed and how you succeeded, because they want to apply it to themselves.
Yep.
So those are my two biggest things, I think, is you know, feeling, not doing, and rapport is really important.
Welcome to the Greg Allen Podcast. Thanks for joining us, where we talk about life. I truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and a lesson to teach, and that's what this show is all about. So if you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave us a review. It helps us connect, inspire, and help more people like you. And I just want to do a big shout out to you for taking the time to grow and improve. So good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in life. Hey, Natasha, thanks so much for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's good that we can still have these things virtually from, you know, you're further away than I am. I think, where are you based?
So I'm based in Byron. How about yourself?
I am in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, which I think is called the freezing cold place. It's been so cold. We have like 6.5 degrees 2 days ago. And this morning there was ice, you know, there's ice on the windscreens. I'm planning on moving to Queensland as soon as my son has finished school.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How old is your son now?
He's 15.
Yeah. And so year 10?
Yeah. He's in year 10. And, we came down to the Southern Highlands a couple of years ago so that he could attend a school down here, and also so that we could kind of have a bit more of a country lifestyle. He, I think, has still yet to forgive me for actually dragging him away from Sydney. I'm hoping that one day he will turn around and go, you know, Mum, it wasn't such a bad thing when you took me out into the middle of nowhere. But
yeah. I think around 28 for a guy who starts to thank his mum for a lot of things.
Well, I hope so, because at the moment at 15, all they do is seem to find you very irritating. And apparently I used the word cringe yesterday in the car, and he said, do not use that word. That is not a cool word. No one says cringe. I was like, okay, cool. Let's go with that. So have you got kids?
Yeah, I've got a 6 and a 3-year-old. So I'm not, I got a girl and a boy. And haven't got to that stage yet. I've just got like, at the moment.
Well, they keep doing that. They keep doing that, but in different ways as they grow older. It's a continuous journey of, you know, being told that you're doing everything wrong. But hey,
yeah. Yeah. So, so how's the journey for parenthood for you been? Like, is it just your son you've got, or extra kids?
Yeah, I have just my son. It's been, I mean, I wouldn't give up having a child for anything in the world. It's been, you know, everything. My whole career basically stalled, you know, in order to kind of be a parent. And then I landed up as a single parent. And so that it has its own, that has its own challenges as well. So I think for me, it's once your family kind of breaks up, once you land up sort of separated, it's never the same. It's always broken. It's a terrible thing to say, but I think when we were growing up and we watched the Brady Bunch and all of these kind of blended families, you thought, oh, you know, it was very romanticized when I was younger, you know, the whole idea of this blended family. And actually it doesn't really work like that. You don't necessarily love your stepchildren the way you're meant to, and you don't necessarily feel the way you're meant to. And I've got a friend who's sort of in her early 40s, and she's thinking about having children. And I said to her, and I don't know if it's probably the wrong thing to say, but I said to her, don't, you know, if you're undecided and you're sitting on the fence and it's not the thing you desperately want at 41, 42, just don't. Yeah. Because I'm 2 years off the end of school, and all I can think about is my life beginning and starting. And I just think, wow, you'll be nearly 60, and you'll be waiting for your life to start.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that you've got to want, you know, like
really want. Yeah. Really, really want. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So Whereabouts are thinking of moving in Queensland, just to somewhere warmer? Or
no, I just want to go somewhere warm. I actually, the first place I landed up was in Surfers Paradise. My, obviously, you can hear I've got a South African accent and my father's Australian. So when we came to Australia the first time, we landed up in Surfers Paradise, which in those days was actually a small place, which was fun. And my dad always fell in love with that. So when I moved to Australia, just before I turned 30, to me, that was home. And so my family have been on the Gold Coast for a long, long time. And I don't know, there's something about it that kind of draws us. And my son keeps saying to me, let's go and live in Queensland, Mom. Let's go and live in Queensland. So I think I love Sydney. It's a great place. And the Southern Highlands is beautiful. But I'm going to the warmth.
Yeah. Where is the Southern Highlands from Sydney? How far away?
So it's an hour and 37 minutes, depending on how fast or slow you drive. It's south, but it's inland a little bit. So it's actually a cool climate region. They actually grow cool climate wines in this particular area. So they'd grow, you know, Pinot and things that are quite difficult to grow in warmer climates. Mm-hmm. It has a microclimate. So it's always 5 degrees colder usually than Sydney without fail. And it's really pretty, a bit sort of almost English countryside-ish. You know, it hasn't got that barren Australian landscape. And I think so a lot of people tend to kind of flock out here to retire. It is pretty much the dead center of Australia, I think.
Yeah. So I've been to the Blue Mountains, and that was west of Sydney, isn't it?
Yes. So the Blue Mountains is sort of, you know, on your way here, you can kind of veer off and kind of get to the Blue Mountains. That's where everyone seems to go. It's never been my favorite. I do find the Southern Highlands much, much prettier.
Yeah, I'll have to come visit now that I'm closer to Sydney. I'd love to come visit.
Bring your kids and, you know, the family, and, you know, we'll take you around all the antique stores. Many of them.
My wife would love that.
There you go.
We'll bring a trailer. Cool. So what have you been working on this year so far?
Well, this year, obviously 2020 has been quite an interesting year. It's been a sort of pivot year. I teach podcasting. So I do podcasting workshops and coach podcasting. I chair the board for Eastside Radio, which is a community radio station in Sydney. It's been going for the past 35 years with a strong focus on jazz. So I've been doing that probably as the chair for the last 5 years. And when I moved to the Southern Highlands, my ex-husband wasn't very happy with my move. And so I landed up having to get a lawyer. And in order to pay for the lawyer, which I didn't have any money for, I worked out that I could potentially teach people how to podcast. I don't know where the idea came from, but it, you know, hit me in this moment of genius. So I started doing podcasting workshops, and towards the beginning of the year, I started entering into the corporate market to try and sort of teach corporates how to podcast and use it for onboarding and as a communications tool for different departments and different things. And it was working really well. And then we had COVID, and COVID obviously shut the door on any kind of group workshops.
Yeah.
So I've been pivoting the business. I love that new word that everyone's using, slowly but surely. So I'm offering workshops which are online through Zoom, and those work exactly the same way. In fact, I've actually been doing quite a lot of one-to-one coaching, and that seems to be even better on Zoom than it ever was face-to-face.
Yeah. No, definitely. Cool. And it's great that you've got onto, you know, a digital format to be able to coach and teach and continue doing what you do. So what are you teaching when you teach someone to podcast? I'd love to hear like the format, the fundamentals, the framework, that sort of stuff.
It's quite interesting. So I work through a workbook. I've got like a 42-page workbook and worksheets as well. So it's quite interactive. That's actually really sort of do the work. And a lot of the work that I do is the creative side of it. So you're kind of coming along, and I mean, you set up your podcast and you are obviously very clear up about what you're doing. But most people, they like the idea of it, but they have no confidence. And so they come in sometimes to my class and they haven't even got an idea, not even a topic, you know? And so we literally start with the subject, like, what subject do you want to do a podcast on? And it's fascinating because I get people going, well, I'm a marketing specialist and I'd like to do a podcast on marketing. But actually, I love dogs. I really love dogs. And I'd like to do a podcast on dogs. I've also been thinking about, you know, how to feed the homeless. And that could also, I think, be an awesome podcast.
Yeah.
Marketing
for homeless dogs.
Well, there you go. Feeding and marketing for homeless dogs. But so what we try and do is we try and work to their strengths. So I often will say to them, you know, what do you know the most about? Because podcasting is hard. So you don't want to sit there not knowing your subject matter, feeling like you are fake, I suppose. You want to kind of come in and you want to have a really good idea. So we kind of hone down the subject. Then we go and find a name.
Yeah.
So we have some rules around, you know, they're not rules, but, you know, some ideas around the best name and obviously something really short, really punchy, a tagline to describe the name, because most people will choose their podcast based on the tag, interesting enough, the explain line.
Yeah.
So, you know, the theory behind the name, and then we will talk about how long it should be, you know, how often they want to do it, and the format. I do a very big section on interview skills because that's probably what I know the most about. Lots on guests, interviewing guests, scripting, and then obviously some on technology, hosting, what to use. The game has moved so much. You know, now we're doing it on Zoom and Zencaster and Anchor and everything else that's out there. So that, and they work, they write down. So they leave with a blueprint of kind of, you know, some pages with how their podcast is going to be.
Yeah. What's the most interesting title and subject that you've heard from?
I had a student who wanted to do one on death.
Okay.
Around death. And I for some reason it really stuck with me because I thought it would actually be an amazing topic.
Yeah.
You know, just how to deal with death and the processes around it and people's experiences around death. That would be really good. I have a friend who's a dominatrix and she came and did my course. So that was pretty amazing to have her in there. And I just loved that everyone in the room was just so cool. They were like, you know, what do you do? Oh, you know, I'm a vet. And what do you do? I have a home renovator and I'm a poet. What do you do? I'm a dominatrix. And everyone just, nobody even, they just went with it. They were pretty cool. It was very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So have these people gone and started their podcast and they're going well with them now?
Quite a lot of my students have gone out and started. Quite a lot during COVID, interestingly enough. It gave them the oxygen to kind of start things.
Yeah.
So I have quite a lot. You know, I've got one amazing student who's got a podcast called She Renovates, Bernadette. She came, she did my workshop. She worked really, really hard. She walked out. She started a podcast. She's done 80 episodes. She's getting 3,000 downloads. She runs so much of her business out of those podcasts and gets a lot of business from it. She's amazing. And even she'll tell you herself, she's not the world's most flamboyant interviewer or professional, but she does it. She just does it. So yeah. Yeah,
that's awesome. And someone to get stuck in and just to, you know, have a concept and just to get started, because, you know, every time you do another one, you learn a little bit and you add something to it and it gets a little bit better every time. And hopefully when most of the people are listening to it, you're actually quite good, you know, because you practice so much.
But the other thing as well is, like, I don't know what a good or a bad podcast really is. You know, people say, I want to be good. And then they go and listen to a whole lot. So, you know, I look at you and, you know, you look so sharp and you've got a beautiful background. You've got the right mic. I mean, you've got the whole thing happening. So, you know, looking at you, I go, okay, that guy's got, you know, Greg's got a really slick podcast, you know, show. But it doesn't necessarily mean that your show is good. I mean, yours is good because you've got interesting questions and idea, but you can have all of that and be a rubbish interviewer, like really rubbish.
Yeah, it's a combination of everything, isn't it?
Exactly. And also, I think what's really important, and you and I both probably value it, is that instant connection that you create as somebody. If you haven't pre-interviewed them, we didn't do pre-interview. You know, you open it up and you're like, hey, how are you? And you want to make that person feel so safe.
Yeah.
Because you want stuff from them. You know, you want details, intimate knowledge. So it's like, go do it with a beautiful smile.
Yeah, totally. I find for me, I get really excited about meeting someone new and not knowing anything about them and starting the call and just being like, hey, how's it going? What are we up to today? And what are we talking about? And that's what I get excited about. And that's part of my, you know, my strategy as a podcaster is to have these conversations because for one, I love it. Like I love the exploration of other people and finding out what interests them and what, you know, their habits are and what they love doing and how they got to where they got to. And that's what I love about podcasting. And, you know, that's part of, you know, and other people want to find out as much as possible before they interview someone. But I find when I do the research, I start to think about, hey, why don't you talk about that? You remember that thing you said in your article? Let's talk about that. And it's sort of, it's not natural anymore. So I like the instant, you know, connection and being able to go from there and talk to anyone.
It's interesting because if you have the right nature, and obviously you've done quite a lot of, you know, you've got quite a bit of experience, it works quite well. There's so many people. I mean, I work with a brilliant woman and she's a brilliant interviewer, but she has to do a lot of research and she has to write questions. And if she doesn't, she panics. Whereas if I write a question, I panic because I then am scared to go off track. And then what happens if I leave the question? So it depends on who you are, I think, as a person. Like I probably am, I sit in between the two of you. So I would do some research, maybe a bit of a pre-interview, and then I'll kick off. Whereas she will literally write, give questions and kind of work through that process.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I love it. That's what I love about podcasters and podcasting in itself is everyone has their own style and everyone's connected to different people for different reasons. And there's no right or wrong way to necessarily do it. I think you need to have good audio. That's probably one of the biggest things. But yeah, people are going to connect to you for what you do and how you do it as well.
You know, and the audio thing, I agree with you. I think a microphone's really important. I think if, you know, if anything, it's the only thing you spend money on, then, you know, a microphone. But I've got people I've taught, people who've interviewed me, who are doing it straight from computer audio. You know, they're going through Zencaster, which is, you know, doing what was Squadcast or one of those apps. And they're not even bothering with the microphone. And because a lot of people who have not got a trained ear can't really tell the difference between that tinny kind of sound and that more sort of rounded sound.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, a good podcaster is someone who actually connects to their audience and they're getting downloads and people want to listen to them. And they're like, I like that guy, that great guy. He's like, I love what he's doing. And he's like my mate. I want to listen to him. And every time he drops one, I'm going to go there. And that makes you successful, I think.
Yeah, totally. Love it. So you touched on that you teach a lot around interviewing skills. I think interviewing skill in itself is such an important skill for people to have, whether you're podcasting or not, to be able to interview a friend, interview a, you know, a family member, to interview just someone you're meeting for the first time, to have those skills. I think it's a really good life skill. So can we have a chat about some of the things that you teach to, you know, maybe some fundamentals, some things that people can take away on how to do better interviews?
So the interview process, when I started doing broadcasting, I did a journalism degree. So I obviously have a quizzy brain. I'm curious about people and how things work. And then I did a live food and wine radio show. And I hosted for a very long time. And I was given it was in a studio. I was given almost no technical assistance. They threw me in the studio and they said, right, go. It was 2 hours and it was live. And I wrote a run sheet of every second, literally every second. So if the song was, you know, a minute, it was there and it was timed, the interview questions. And I remember I had a couple of really famous chefs came on and by the third or fourth show, I was, you know, I thought I had this down pat and I was killing it. And I got a phone call, and they say for every phone call you get in a show, there's 1,000 people listening. I was so excited. So I went and answered the phone and, you know, did my spiel. And this voice on the other side was a man's voice. And he said, "She is so shit. Get her off."
Oh, no.
And I was a little bit sort of like, oh, right. Okay. And, you know, I felt very ashamed. Like, I was massively ashamed and I was embarrassed, but I thought, well, no one's heard. And I thought, okay, I've got a choice. I can leave. I can stop doing this because I'm obviously really rubbish at it. Or I can, you know, I can do something. So I walked inside, I tore the run sheets up, and I started to go by the seat of my pants. And on some of my shows, I would have up to 5 people in a studio with alcohol and food. And I would actually have to manage that process between all of them. Yeah. And sometimes a little bit drunk as well, which I probably shouldn't have been, but I did get there sometimes. So the thing that I learned about how to do that is what we spoke about, is to build rapport. So it's about making that person your friend. So I teach people, I say, right, if you go into a room and you see something you really like, not of the opposite sex, like, you know, something you really dig and you think, I want to be friends with that person, you're going to think about what the stuff is to connect with that person so that they become your friend. And the same thing with an interview. You want the person to like you, to want to be your friend. So that is something that you have to think about. You think, how do I connect to that guest on their level? What would they like to talk about? What would be interesting for them? I teach people that emotions are much more important than things that they have done. So how do you feel is a far more interesting answer than what did you do? Because people are interested in feelings and they want to know how you failed and how you succeeded, because they want to apply it to themselves.
Yep.
So those are my two biggest things, I think, is, you know, feeling, not doing, and rapport is really important. I think you've got to learn how to control guests. I've had issues before where guests have come on with the idea of what they want to say, and they haven't listened to the questions. And I have in the past switched off the mics and sat back and gone, this is my interview. It has to go on the journey that I'm on if you're uncomfortable. And they've said to me, but that's not the best part of the story. And I've gone, but that's the story I want. Yeah. So I think you got to give them some kind of boundary if they're challenging you around that kind of thing. And then I also do a section on being authentic. So I always say that if you're yourself, people will like you. And if they like you, then, you know, you're going to be okay. But if you're trying to be like someone else, I can't interview like you. You know, you even sit still and just shake your head. I mean, I've got like ADHD. I mean, my hands are going and everything's happening. You know, so
you don't know what's going on inside me right now. I'm very still, but inside me, I want to jump up and down.
But, you know, so I look at you and I think, oh, maybe I should be doing it like him. And then you look at someone else and you think, maybe I should be doing it like them. Oh no, maybe that person's doing it right. Just be yourself, you know, be yourself. So those are my tips. You know, obviously we do a bit more than that, but those are probably the 3 top tips.
Yeah, totally. So with that time, so that person's like, this person's so shit. You know, that person in themselves, is that's their opinion, right?
Yep.
So how did you handle that? Like, after that, you took it back, you ripped up the run sheet, came back, and then how did you, like, what did you feel like after the show? Like, what, tell me about that.
No, I was devastated. I was deeply humiliated. You know, I was struggling anyway. I didn't have really anyone. I didn't have a mentor or someone who was giving me feedback.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I was on a radio station that had lots of listeners, and not only that, I was also in an industry, the food and wine industry, where I needed to interview like top chefs and top people. And there was somebody saying, you know, that I was rubbish, but I was rubbish. I knew I was rubbish. He wasn't wrong. I was rubbish. I was I was stony and fake and forced and controlled and totally opposite to the way I actually am as a human being. And so, you know, but I did, I mean, I did have a couple of people who would phone me up. I had one lovely lady phone me up and she said to me, she said, I love your show. She said, it's just the best show I've ever listened to. She said, but I have to tell you, every now and again, you do get half cut. She said, and you have played Mustang Sally 3 times in the last 2 hours. I really think you need an assistant.
Some constructive advice, at least.
And then she became my assistant. So it was okay. Right.
How good is that? So, so what made that, like, on that interview, you're saying I was stone cold, like there was this, there was that, I was, you know, too scripted or whatever it was. What other things made it a bad experience? Like, what made it so bad? Are you saying it's bad? So what made it so bad so people can learn from that?
The fact that I was obviously very canned in terms of the way that I was delivering it, the fact that it was timed, and probably also from a technical point of view, you know, you, when you're sitting in a studio, you're trying to kind of move through, you know, fading people in and out. It's not like this. You're actually, you've got music that you need to play. You've got spots that you need to play. So you're trying to give, you've got, we had 5 microphones around the table. So everyone's sitting at a mic. They've got the food and they've got the wine. And you're literally trying to kind of manage everyone in terms of giving them all equal time and space.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's, I run a second brain at the same time as I am doing this. So my second brain is usually going, how long have I spoken for? Are you flat? Are you boring? Are you going too fast, which is my problem? You know, has that person given you enough? How do you, can you stop them? So I kind of second guess it all the way through to try and create a level balanced experience.
Yeah.
I don't think anything's wrong. You know, if you've got a, it doesn't matter what your voice is like. Yeah. If you, and also you can change your voice. I mean, I've taught people, I teach people in my class. We do an exercise where I get them to sell their breakfast to me verbally. So they've got to talk about how delicious it was and how they had, you know, apple and cinnamon and they baked it slightly. And then when they took it out of the baking paper, it was just a little bit gooey. And then, you know, some of the syrup dropped on their fingers and it, they ate that with some really gorgeous, I don't know, whatever porridge or whatever. But by the time, so you're like, sell it to me, make me hear the, you know, the stuff. I think that's the other thing is like, get in touch with the texture.
Yeah, totally. And like to be a part of it and to really embrace yourself into the conversation and to be all of that as well. So how did you get into like podcast coaching? You said you did a journalism degree. Like where did all this come from? Like what's your journey into that space?
So the, I mean, I suppose I started off with, I wanted to be a war correspondent, but the war correspondent thing, you know, was quite unsexy by the time I got to university. I mean, people were dying. I was like, not, this is not cool. So I landed up doing a journalism degree. I went into women's magazines. How incredibly uncool is that? So I did that. And then from there, I went into magazines and newspapers and I had my own food and wine newspaper in the eastern suburbs of Sydney for a while. And I kind of got invited to do the community radio station thing. And in the beginning, when they said to me, come and do this food and wine show, and I said, I can't do that. And he said, why can't you do that? And I said, because I have a South African accent. And he said, but so does 3/4 of the eastern suburbs. You're going to be just fine. Anyway, so that was the beginning of that. And I also did a second show. So I did a food and wine show and then I started doing a second show called The Dialogue, which I do have up as a podcast. And that was all pre-recorded. So it was the remarkable lives of interesting people. And I got to interview lots of, quite a few celebrities, some brilliant business people who make extraordinary amounts of money, charity organizers. Like it was just, it's an amazing show. Amazing people are on The Dialogue. They're extraordinary. And while I was doing that with the pre-record, I was learning how to podcast because it's all part of the process, using Audition, microphones, headsets, you know, recording it, playing with the sound at the end, adding the intros and outros, kind of made sense. And so yeah, that's sort of how I thought, well, if I can do this, why can't I make it available to other people?
Yeah, I love it. That's so good. And I love to that you've spent the time experiencing it and doing it yourself, and then to be able to give that knowledge back and all the lessons that you've learned. What are some of the most memorable interviews with the celebrities and business people that you can
talk about? how much time do you have?
So much.
Oh my God. I've had, the interesting thing was at the end of it was how resilient people who are perceived to be successful are. At the end, they weren't the richest and they weren't the happiest, but man, they were freaking resilient, you know, like what they had survived. I think one of my favorite ones was an interview I did with Cheetah Gavira. So Cheetah came from Africa and she had been raised in a village where she had been abused by a family member at a very young age, I think from about 7. She lost her mother soon after to AIDS. She was left looking after a very old grandmother and a little brother. And her family tried to get her to marry off at the age, I think, of 10 to a man with a blue car. And Cheetah said no, she didn't want to. She managed to get into a scholarship program to learn how to grow mushrooms. And she grew these mushrooms. And so when she was doing that, she learned how to farm and she became an amazing farmer. And the farming practices that she did uplifted the whole village and herself. And she runs a foundation and she's extraordinary. Like, she's amazing.
Amazing. Oh, yeah.
She's great. I interviewed the guys who owned Dilma, Dilma T. And Dylan spoke to me about their involvement in the tsunami and how he worked. They set up food to feed everyone after the tsunami. And one of the ladies that was working for them had lost every member of her family, her children, everything. But she came down every single day and she created curries to feed all these other people. And they're an amazing company, an amazing business. Australia was the first market that Dilma was allowed to go into because Sri Lanka had only ever, they had to sell their tea in bulk. So yeah, so it was, Australia was their first market. So that was quite interesting.
So they couldn't sell to the local market or there's no
They weren't allowed to sell. They had to actually sell the tea in at the tea markets, you know, by weight, because it was a commodity.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to actually package and label it themselves. And so Dilma was one of the few. His father, who was a very poor guy, he actually managed to get that across the line so that they were able to actually create their own brands. I've interviewed Neil Whittaker from The Judge on the Block.
Yeah.
He, he looks super confident and told me that every day he wakes up and puts a suit of armor on and goes into the world to deal with life. I've interviewed Barry Dubois from The Living Room, who has fought cancer his whole neck is literally metal rods holding him upright. And he came from such a poor home that they used to holiday at the boat show because that was the only way they could imagine what it would be like to be on a holiday together.
Yeah, right. Wow. Yeah, definitely a lot of resilience there of those people having to work through tough situations and keep pushing and to find their success, you know, whatever that is that they're looking for. How do you get connected with these people? Like, how do you get in touch, and get them onto your show?
I work through quite a few PR agencies. You know, they're quite good from that point of view. You've got to obviously have an audience that makes it a lot easier. But I network quite a lot. I've got a very large Facebook account. I've got 4,500 friends on my Facebook account. I just get up front. I walk up to them if I'm in a room with them or get on the phone or connect. And I'm like, I'm doing this podcast and I want you to be on it. And it would be so amazing to interview you. And then some of them say yes and some of them say no.
Yeah.
No. You know what it's like.
Where did you build that confidence from to be able to just walk up to someone and say what you wanted and be able to get a response?
Well, actually, I'm I don't know. You know, I'm quite neurotic actually. And quite sort of, I'm quite an anxious person generally, but one day someone said to me, you know, if all these people were so amazing, they would be doing what you're doing, and they're not. So, you know, they obviously want to hear what you have to say, and why don't you just give it, you know, just go out there and try. And I worked out that like rejection is part of being human. The people are going to say no, you know, lovers are going to leave you, and friends are going to walk away, and life is a series of kind of moments where you win and then you lose. And so what's the worst that you can say to me? No, I'm sorry, I don't want your past.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't want you to be future. Well, okay, somebody else will.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. So is that something you learn in journalism school? Because what I'm thinking of, like journalists, I'm just, for some reason, I'm thinking like people get up in the face. Hey, I want to talk to you. Come here. And they're able to get stuff out of people. So is that like a module you learn at university around that?
No, it's definitely not a module you learn at university. It's just something you hone from life, I think. I think it's just from, you know, you. How are you going to get something if you don't ask for it?
Yeah.
My granny was Scottish. She was awesome. She used to say, if you don't ask for a discount, darling, you'll never get one. You must always ask. They can just say no.
Yeah.
So it's true, you know, like if you don't ask, you don't know the answer. If you want to go out with that guy that you like, ask him on a date. What's the worst thing that can happen? He'll say no, or maybe he'll say yes. And then, you know, you'll get to have a wonderful life. If you want that job, why don't you go and ask for the job? Say, I want this job. I'd be great at this job. I'm brilliant.
Yeah.
What's the worst they can say? No, we don't want you for the job. Okay, stuffy, I'll go to somewhere else.
Yeah, totally. I remember my wife got so embarrassed this one time. I did this period where I was every single place I went to ask for a discount. It was just a you know, an exercise I was doing for myself to build confidence. And it was just like the randomest places I'd ask for a discount. And people were like, what? Like, what are you asking for a discount? Like at Big W or Coles or always. I'll just say it. And then I'd start laughing, you know, and it was just fun, you know.
But you never know. Sometimes they're like, oh yeah, that is actually on special. Or, you know, you ask for a discount. I don't ask for a discount. I always say, you know, is there a better price for that? Because there's a way to ask, I guess. You know, is there a better price for that? They're like, oh yeah, I can do you a better price. You're like, cool, let's go with that better price. Yeah. I'm always broke, you know, I never have enough money. So I'm always on the lookout for a discount.
Yeah. Cool. So journalism school, what was that like for you? What got you into journalism, apart from the war?
I went to university after the war thing. I went to university in South Africa, and, you know, it was just something that everyone kind of did. And I don't know, I always loved the idea of sort of being a journalist. I thought it was quite glamorous. It wasn't and hasn't been. But I'm probably one of the few people that use my creative skill today in what I do. So I'm kind of lucky, and it does filter into everything, you know, you know, question and answer and being curious. I think that is something that I still use. So university experience was great. You know, it was wild, lots of, you know, drugs and parties and the things that go on at university. And I keep telling, you know, all the young people, I'm like, go to university. It's free. You can do everything you want to do. It's awesome. So. You know, it was a good time to be alive.
Yeah, cool. And so what skills do you still keep from like what you learned at university in journalism? What skills are you still using today that you would say are the most valuable to you?
I think a lot to do with format, how to format things. You know, it's sort of entrenched into you, that sort of beginning, middle and end kind of process, how that kind of works.
Oh, like paragraph sentence and sentence structure?
Yeah, just not even sentence structure, but just the idea of how to structure a conversation or an email or whatever it is. You know, that idea that there is an introduction to a theme and the middle of that process and then a way to kind of end. You know, so there's a journey that you need to send people on.
Yeah.
And same thing with podcasting. You want to send someone on some kind of journey. For an outcome at the end.
Yeah. Can you run over that structure? Because my wife, just a couple of weeks ago, was reading up about sentence structure, paragraph structure, and she's like, oh, this is like eureka moment, because she swapped schools a lot when she was going through high school and didn't really click in. And she spoke that to me and I was like, oh yeah, that's what you learn in high school. And I actually didn't think about it since. So if you could run through just
I probably can't run through it. I mean, thinking about the structure, I think it's not, so I don't actually know. I don't think it's, yeah, well, it's the how, what, when, why, I think, you learn. So it's like, you know, those are the questions that you need to ask yourself. So it's, you know, how did it happen? When did it happen? Why did it happen? How did it happen? You know, so that's how you would formulate your news story or even anything else. I mean, that's how I teach my son to answer his questions when he's doing his assignments. You know, the who, what, when, how, and why is essentially what you want to know. So if you've got all of those elements down, then you will have that structure, and some of them need to be in the beginning. So when you're formulating the beginning part of your story or whatever it is, it's like, you know, who did it, when did they do it, and how did they do it? And then, you know, and then the second paragraph would be, well, why did they do it? So you get into that kind of that element, and then that kind of conclusion, which brings it all together, which says, you know, this is how it happened, and this is why, and this is kind of where it's kind of going. And that for me is the structure I use.
Yeah. No, I was fascinated when she was explaining it as well, because she was just saying like the first sentence sort of ties into the paragraphs that you're about to write. And I was just like, oh yeah, far out. I haven't even thought about that since I was at high school. So
no.
Yeah.
Well, you also take, you know, you take that theme and you put, so, you know, that first paragraph is the introduction, and then you kind of theming the paragraphs afterwards around a particular idea, so that they, you know, and I think also to try and give yourself a 360 view of that particular thing. So not just that one-sided kind of view from your own point of view. I think, you know, one of the things I say about podcasting, and you might find this, is that it gives you a voice in a time when you need a voice more than anything else. Today we need to be heard, and how else are you going to get heard unless you are actually saying things you need to say?
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, totally. And it's a great format to be able to do that. And it's, you know, you don't have to sit there and write and write and write and write and then have someone have to sit there and read and read and read. So it's a great format. I feel, I love doing it.
Absolutely.
So tell me about writing for the women's magazines. What was that like?
Frivolous, lighthearted and shallow, I would probably go for. I mean, I started working for a craft magazine in South Africa. And, you know, it was all about beauty and all the things I think that women really like. I mean, I still love all of those things. I mean, as soon as COVID hit, I went out and spent most of my money on makeup that no one was ever, ever going to see me wear. I have no idea why. It was my first thing. I was like, I need to buy makeup. I have no idea why. But, you know, I learned what I learned in women's magazines. I learned how to swear. I learned how to swear really badly. And, you know, I learned how to just add words together that were like extraordinary sentences that would make your eyes water. I learned how to cook, because we had a cooking section and we used to, the cooking was very important. Learned how to cook through that. And then I went on and I worked for a bridal magazine, and I worked for, you know, newspapers, community newspapers, and a whole lot of different things. It teaches you lots of stuff. It teaches you a lot of, you know, I styled quite a lot of shoots and did a lot of that. But God, I would hate to do that now. It would be such hard work. I mean, I remember dragging wedding dresses around and taking them onto roofs. And oh God, I think of nothing.
For the photo shoot.
Oh shit, yeah. You know, I remember I did a Jewish shoot and we had a chuppah. And the chuppah was on top of someone's house in Dover Heights. And the wind came up. And I remember spending hours standing there holding one side of this chuppah up in the wind with the wedding dresses. And I was just like, oh, this is for the birds. I don't want to do this anymore. This is rubbish.
Yeah, parachute, just go off into the wind.
Yeah. But I think, you know, I'm kind of at that stage where my son's finishing school and I'm at that redefining moment. And I love podcasting and teaching. And, you know, I've set up so that I do amazing workshops and they're great. But I love homes and I love interiors and I love that. I've set up quite a lot of Airbnbs for a lot of friends of mine and used to run a very successful one in Sydney before COVID killed it.
Yeah.
I do the podcasting and I'm also opening a very small little homeware store in one of the nearby towns. So I'm going to slowly but surely reinvent myself, which I think will be quite fun.
Awesome. That sounds super fun. Yeah. So what's having an Airbnb like? Like how from the setup, was that your home in Sydney? Did you keep the home
No.
and then you moved down? No.
No. I bought a studio apartment in just very close to Hyde Park, gutted it and redid it, and then sort of thought, well, I'll give this podcast and this Airbnb thing a go.
Yeah.
And from the day I opened it up, it was full. I made a fortune, a little like small fortune. It was booked every single day, month in and month out, and highly successful, brilliant location. Lots of hard work, very yeah. hard work, quite stressful.
Yeah.
And then I set up quite a few for a few friends of mine who were also in the same position, and those were also very successful. So listen, when the tourism market comes back, if that's something you're good at, you know, go for it because it's yeah. worth it.
So what tips would you give someone that might be considering setting up an Airbnb? Just things to look out for, how to set it up right. What's some things that you could recommend?
I think the way it looks is really important, but you know, somebody actually said to me, the girl who did my drawings for me, I was like, oh, I want it to be rustic and like this. And she was like, white. And I was like, that's so boring. And she goes, people want to visit a clean space. They want to see it's clean.
Yeah.
So everything in my apartment is white on white. But then very beautiful touches. So like the kitchen is stainless steel with custom made bench tops and beautiful tiles and some really different bits and pieces. So people feel like they're going into somewhere that's kind of exotic, but it's still very clean.
Yeah.
That's really important. The little touches are really important. Like I use eco products and they get chocolates when they arrive and the linen is really nice. And I don't believe in making the beds to look like hotel beds. I kind of make them like my bed, fluffy. You know,
yeah,
fluffy
yeah.
and lots of pillows. And you know, that the bed is the most important thing. If you've got a smaller space with a lower mortgage, fit more people in. So I have a studio and I sleep four. So, you know, maximize people. I think that's really important in an Airbnb.
So is that like a double bed and two stretcher beds or something like that, or a futon, or how did you?
A pull-out sofa. So pull out sofa for two, and then because they don't want to spend a lot of money. If they're going Airbnb, it's not because they want to spend a lot of money and they want to be able to cook. And, you know, so that works really, really well. So quality linen, quality accessories, nice environment, awesome location, and then you've just got to be on the ball, you know, like answer the questions quickly, have things set up, make sure that they understand the rules and the boundaries, and yeah, it's otherwise pretty good.
Did you have any horror guests come through?
I have had one, just one that stand out. I knew there was something wrong and I didn't go with my gut. I think they did quite a lot of ice in the apartment. And when I got in, there were just little bags of crystal meth everywhere. You know, they'd smoked and there were stains everywhere. And they stole my knives from my kitchen and they hacked. They were chopping their jugs and it was a bit of a disaster.
Oh my
it was a sad day and a sad moment. I felt very violated, but.
Did you go back up to check it often? Because you're obviously what did you say, about an hour away?
Yeah, an hour and 35 minutes. Yeah, I actually did all the cleaning myself. So I would go up regularly and kind of go and do it. I mean, I ran it like a business. So
yeah.
It was you know, between that and the podcasting, it was good.
Is that a lot of travel? What about the overnight stays? Or you'd only have a minimum of 3 nights or something like that?
So I do a minimum of two, and most people would stay anything from 2 to sometimes 3 weeks. So it just depended.
Yeah.
Winter, we got a lot of Asian clientele and they like to spend 2 nights.
Yeah.
And then in the warmer months, as then we got different travelers and they like to spend longer.
Yeah. So less travels up there to clean it.
Mm. Now there's no traveling at all to clean anything.
Yeah.
Now it's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So how are you handling that? Obviously you've got the mortgage still, or do you have a mortgage? Don't have to worry about it.
Well, you just got to kind of do other things. You know, you've got to just find other ways to make ends meet and just rethink. So, you know, pivoting my business from an actual workshop, physical workshop, to an online workshop, that changes the dynamic. Doing more corporate workshops, that's really good. I love the corporate market. It's a really great market.
Yeah.
You know, and just working through the opportunities. I MC for events. So I've been asked to do a few of those and just cobbling it together as you go.
Cool. Like it. So wrapping back around to where you started talking about that you do corporate podcasting and stuff like that. So that's internal podcasts for companies.
Yep.
So how do you go about structuring those? Like, is that, you know, an onboarding process and you're sort of creating a podcast for your new staff members to be able to follow through? How does that go?
Well, I allow them to kind of determine what they want. Some want to do internal podcasts. So they want to do onboarding or, you know, safety or, you know, whatever it is that's really interesting, interdepartmental. They don't want to use PDFs any longer. So they want to actually just give people the opportunity to listen. And podcasting is the most intimate form of communication. So if you are podcasting, then you are basically going straight into someone's ears. So they do that. And a lot of them still want external community. So we talk about building magnetic communities. How do you build a community that likes what you're doing? How do you give a corporate business a personal face? You know, it's to create that authenticity that actually there's a human being that works there, not, you know, a brand.
Yeah, totally. So would you post that out into like Anchor, which is public, and let everyone else hear it? Or do you put it onto a private format platform?
A lot of them would do it on the intranet. So they're actually, because they're big companies. So, you know, I've done them for the, you know, Public Service Commission and businesses that are huge. They've got their internal intranet. So they like to keep a lot of that information internal. Yeah. I don't always produce their work. A lot of them, I will help set it up. They'll actually produce it often themselves or within a studio environment. I tend to only produced for some people. I'm not big on the production side. I find it a bit boring. So, you know, I'm like, I'll teach you how to do it. Off you go. Yeah. There, you know, you know. You go and do it. Yeah, exactly. That's what podcasting is supposed to be. You know, not high end, expensive exercise.
Oh, that's what's so good about it. You just go chop if you do it right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how I think the beauty of podcasting is that you can use it for anything, on any topic, about, you know, as long as you want, as short as you want. It's yours. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So what's next for you? Like, what are you planning on doing from now? So you've got your online coaching, online training for podcasting. You said you're going to go do that, the hardware shop. What else do you think might
It's not hardware, it's a homeware store.
Homeware, so
I think that's probably it. So I'm launching a Learn How to Podcast series at the moment. I've just recorded, I think, my 13th episode, which is going up in a couple of weeks. So we're starting to do that. Literally all the things you've asked me about, you know, it talks about the frequency and the naming, and I've kind of given my workshop as a podcast. So if people didn't want to do a workshop and they listen to every episode, they would be able to get there in the end. So I'm launching that at the moment. I've got a workshop coming up soon. I've just joined up with the New South Wales Business Month for October. They've got something coming up. I'm going to open my store. Hopefully someone will travel again and I'll have my Airbnb, and hopefully I'll get my son through his HSC. So that's a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah. Heaps going on.
Yeah.
In your homeware store, like, what are you hoping to sell, and what's your angle there? What are you trying to?
I'm going to do some local makers. So I thought I'd just kind of support the people in the local area. It's a tiny little shop, and, you know, ceramics and some wooden stuff and some, you know, really beautiful, nice aesthetic. nice natural color tones, some bunnies for the kids, and just keep it sort of local makers and things that are really natural and really beautiful.
Yeah, nice. Especially with a town full of antiques and all of the other things to bring it all together and have that local touch. Yeah.
Will be nice. Yeah, will be great. So awesome. I think there's lots of things to be excited about. Lots.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I've loved chatting to you, Natasha. It's been great fun. And
thank you.
Is there any way that people can get in touch with you?
Yeah. So my website is www.powerofpodcasting.com.au. And my email address is hello@powerofpodcasting.com.au. My name's spelled a bit odd. So it's got an S and a C in it somewhere. It's hard to Google it. But my website is easy. Just pop on there. And, you know, if somebody was interested in learning how to podcast, that would be awesome, or finding out about homewares, whatever. I'm happy to talk about anything.
Yeah. Awesome. Appreciate your time and thanks for sharing your story and what you're up to.
Thank you so much for interviewing me. It was great. It was lovely to meet you.
You too. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.